You are listening to The Intersection on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80. It's presented by Progressive Insurance. You can tweet us at Clinton Yates, at L Duncan ESPN. We keep telling you to call because we like to, in the words of everyone that's wrong when they say it, Clinton, conversate. 888-729-3776. Not a word. We can confirm. Not a word, right?
Not a word. No. Absolutely not.
Thank you. You are the wordsmith. I lean on you. You could probably say it in French as well. Remember to tune into the ESPN Daily Podcast, bringing you a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters. Presented by Marathon. Download, subscribe, review ESPN Daily. Available wherever you enjoy your podcast. You'll be able to enjoy this podcast after it is done. But we heard it off the top, Clinton. Huge news coming out yesterday. The image of Maya Moore, superstar basketball player, champion at every single level, who decided that she was going to put her career on hold and not pursue another championship and not go to another Olympics because she wanted to fight for her friend Jonathan Irons, who was in prison under very questionable conditions for the last 24 years and was, frankly, staring down the barrel of another 20 before he was eligible for parole. He was released. It worked. I mean, just very quickly, like, what was your reaction when you saw that her efforts were not in vain?
I started crying, straight up. I mean, it was that emotional to think about not only the sacrifice that she made for him in terms of her basketball career, in terms of the time she spent, but just to think that this guy had somebody put faith in him and it actually came to fruition is unbelievable. Because the number of us that get locked up and they throw away the key is outlandish if you genuinely think about it. Now, some of y'all like to think about this as if it makes sense. But look at the number of folks that we got in jail in this country, in prison. And look at the number of people that are in the country. Then look at how other countries do this. And then look at how many of the people in this country are black folks. And brown folks, then you'll start to see what it feels like to have your freedom threatened, never mind taken away. For Maya Moore to be able to do this and educate America at the same time, absolute American hero. I'm so happy. I'm so proud. This is a very, very good day in terms of criminal justice reform.
It certainly is. And you just heard her in that sound off the top of the show sort of mention shifting her priorities and using her platform. And I want to bring in someone who has been making headlines over the last few weeks for doing exactly that. Renee Montgomery is an Atlanta Dream guard. And I mentioned Maya Moore winning at every level. Well, Renee Montgomery, we certainly know that. She played with Maya Moore at UConn. Renee is also a national champion and won a championship with Maya Moore in Minnesota as well before she came to the Atlanta Dream. But Renee made news because she has decided to forego the condensed WNBA season this year so that she too can focus her efforts on social justice causes. And I just want to ask you, Renee, before we get more into your story, what was your reaction to finding out that someone that you called a friend and colleague and teammate, that what she decided to do really paid dividends in the end?
Yeah, you know, I saw that video, and first of all, let me say thank you guys for having me on here.
Of course,
I like the conversation. First thing that I noticed, you know, I watched the video probably the same time everyone else did, and I tweeted out, it was so beautiful and intimate, I almost felt like I shouldn't even be watching it. Mm-hmm. And that's my sentiment about everything Mama is doing. And, you know, Swin Cash had said, you know, she was performing for an audience of one. And if people don't understand what that means, she's never really gone about it in a media way. You know, she just had her hard hat on. And Clinton, going back to something he said, I think that, you know, it took her 2+ years to make it happen. That's just one man. So to put things in perspective about how people, you know, don't think about it, yeah, there's a lot of black and brown people in prison, unproportionate amount of numbers in relation to the population. And it took her that much time. And somebody with that magnitude, that platform, that celebrity to get an innocent man out. So that's exciting that she got him out. But I hope that shows people how the system, when people say systematic things aren't a real thing, you know, people are starting to say, oh, it's a myth. How do you cure systematic racism? I think this is all a myth, smoke and mirrors. It's not an innocent man was just released. So it's not smoke and mirrors. And you have to just give her so much credit for that.
Renee, you mentioned that the reason why you're foregoing this season is obviously a lot because of social justice, but, you know, there's other reasons. But my point is, what does, in your opinion, for you, because not everybody can do what Maya Moore does or needs to do what Maya Moore does, what does it mean for you to be more focused on this in terms of your day-to-day and what you're going to engage in over the summer?
Yeah, so what that means for me is people that know me know I'm a passionate person. You know, Coach Ariema, when I think it was Trey Wingo asked about it, he was saying that passionate people go about life a certain way. They're passionate about life. They're passionate, you know, when you watch them play, they're passionate, and that's what propels them to be the players they are. So for me, if my passion that drives me and propels me is not there right now, I'm going where it is. And so for me, what that looks like on a day-to-day basis is being able to take a call, set my own schedule, you know, and in the WNBA, you can't do that with 3 games a week, not including practices, film sessions. You can't do that. So I wanted the ability to set my own schedule, to focus on what I wanted to focus on, and hopefully to make some change.
We are joined on the intersection right now with Renee Montgomery, Atlanta Dream guard, who has decided to sit out the WNBA season so that she can pursue social justice causes. And I know, Renee, when you talked to me a few weeks ago for the ESPYs pre-show, you were sort of trying to figure out where you wanted to focus your efforts, but you had mentioned potentially with voting rights, which, of course, is something that's been all over the news in Georgia, has always been an issue. As someone that is born and raised in Atlanta, I fully understand what that looks like, particularly in the city of Atlanta. What was your reaction to finding out that in conjunction with the Atlanta Hawks at State Farm Arena, where you play typically, generally, was going to become the largest voting site in the history of Georgia? What was your reaction to that?
You know, my first reaction was, wow, why didn't anyone think of that before?
Right.
You know, like, in a sense right. of, it's a great idea. You know, it's actually a great idea. And one thing that I'm excited about, and to go back to what you said, you're right. When I first talked to you in the ESPYs, it was interesting because people don't understand that I took a leap of faith. People don't really know what that means in a sense because they couldn't understand that I didn't have a plan already in place, but I did it, you know? So that was a lot of people's struggle. Since then, you know, I've kind of found my footing and found where I'll fit in. But going back to the arena, I think that this is the power of an organization like More Than a Vote, you know, in a sense that now that's what I'm backing. And they brought that to the table. Arenas and surrounding facilities, they're safe and accessible. You know, first of all, they're not being used because we know that the teams are going into the bubble. But not only that, here in Atlanta, you know, a lot of people talk about this about State Farm. The MARTA, which is public transportation, goes straight to State Farm.
Yep.
Like you don't have to take a lift. You don't have to take anything. The MARTA goes straight to the arena. And it's that way with a lot of arenas with public transit. So not only do you solve a problem of a big facility that can host a lot of voters, but you also solve a problem of getting people there, transportation. That's something that's overlooked a lot, but in a poverty community where a lot of people now, especially in a pandemic, people are losing their jobs, people might not want to pay a Lyft ride. So I think it's a great thing, and I hope to see it a trend now in the NBA.
Renee, last thing I'll ask you, and this is not just a question about the WNBA or the NBA, but I ask this question of a lot of people. What have you learned about yourself in 2020 after all these things that we've seen, be it pandemic, be it Black Lives Matter, and just in general, the world?
Yeah, that is a great question. And I think, you know, I've been playing basketball my whole life. And the moment I decided to stop playing, I think I learned the most about myself. I'm usually not the one to go against the grain or necessarily ruffle the feathers. Definitely not one to talk about controversial things. So for me to even do this, a lot of people don't understand how this is pretty far outside of my comfort zone. You know, I'm the happy-go-lucky Hakuna Matata type, but that's just where I am right now. And I think that me doing this kind of was a surprise to myself, but I don't know. I felt like maybe I'm stronger than I thought.
You are, and you're certainly an inspiration, Renee. Thank you for joining us, friend of the program. I really look forward to what you're going to be able to do because, as I told you before, you know, you're someone that has found her purpose outside of her talents. You're incredibly talented at what you do, but your sacrifice, the sacrifice that you're making, rather, and in service of your community, I think is really incredible and inspiring. So thanks for joining us. Good luck in your efforts. Anything that you need, a platform, we've got that. So if you ever need to use us, please do, Renee.
I appreciate you guys for having me, and I'm going to take you up on that.
You know
it. All right,
it.
Bye, Renee.
You know it. Bye, Renee. And listen, Clinton, let me just speak real fast to the MARTA, right?
Yeah, no doubt.
I'm from Atlanta. She's right, because the MARTA is, and I'm doing air quotes right now that you can't see on radio, the transportation system, the train system in Atlanta, it basically looks like a tiny little crucifix. It goes nowhere. It goes nowhere except for to State Farm Arena and like their Mercedes-Benz Dome. So the idea right. that you could go to one of maybe three places in Atlanta, it goes, the airport being one of them, it really is significant and huge in terms of being able to get people there to vote.
That's what's up. Moving yeah. Africans rapidly through Atlanta. Marta,
oh, no,
you know about
no,
it.
No, no.
My sister went to Spelman. You know I had to say that.
No.
I'm saying okay. it's true.
I know. It is true. It's very true. That's what we call it. Oh, acronyms. Coming up, NBA players want to draw awareness to social justice issues, but what should their approach be when the season resumes in Orlando? One person of this two-person show says, lowered expectations. It's The Intersection on ESPN Radio.
Intersection on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app and Sirius XM Channel 80. Clint Yates, L. Duncan, we're presented by Progressive Insurance. And all guests on the program appear via the show or performance line. You want to tweet us at L Duncan ESPN. You can find me at Clinton Yates on Twitter. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Protecting your small business is a big deal. Cover what you've worked so hard for. Visit ProgressiveCommercial.com. The NBA is headed on down to Orlando. We've seen a lot of different changes in terms of an assortment of regulations and rules and God knows what, L. But one of the things that the NBPA said that they want to be getting involved in is basically a demonstration of more social justice efforts on a public front. Now, they discussed the idea of putting whatever they want on the back of jerseys so that they could, you know, display their cause. The idea of putting Black Lives Matter on the courts is something that's also been addressed and discussed. And, you know, it's difficult because I think when a lot of people look at the concept of revolution or what protest is or what, you know, just general activism is, they seem to think that it has to be big and brash and change everything at once or bang somebody over the head with some piece of understanding they didn't have before. And that's never necessarily been the way I've felt about how sports changes a lot of things. The way I've seen it is people listen to athletes because they like what they bring to their lives. And if what they bring to their lives is sports, okay. But if in some other realm it's something that teaches them about something else, whether it be overtly or otherwise, then that's something that you should give a shot to. So when you see Black Lives Matter on a court, it doesn't mean that you're all of a sudden going to go out and start telling every police officer that they need to keep their hands off of protesters. What it means is that in your mind, going forward, if you're a young person, you've normalized that phrase, which is not a political phrase. It is simply a statement of agency from Black folks, you know? And so the separate thing from that and the jerseys and the individualism and what happens on the court are two different things. But my point is that I don't think we need to see the NBA looking for some sort of huge statement right now. They're still trying to figure it out. They're trying to play a tournament. They got a bunch of different guys who want to do a lot of things. This is a step one towards whatever we get to, and I'm not looking for the NBPA to turn into the NAACP right now.
Yeah, I mentioned it to Lloyd Pierce because, well, I think, to your point, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's something that when it becomes sort of part of the lexicon, it becomes reflexive to say Black Lives Matter when we can finally move past having to, you know, do the well, all lives matter crap.
Right.
Then that's a win for everyone, right? But when I was asking him sort of this idea that a lot of what they're talking about doing is symbolic, I think that to your point and sort of my issue originally with what Kyrie Irving and some of these players were sort of saying, Dwight Howard, when he was like, I don't want to play until we get these things resolved, is that, you know, this is a marathon, yo. I mean, there is so yeah. much that needs to be done. The NBA can't all of a sudden fix their numbers but that make it to where they have more than 8 Black head coaches or the fact that we have no owners in the NBA that are Black or the fact that, you know, we have almost no GMs or the fact that they don't work with Black vendors or the fact that most of their NBA Cares programs don't involve, you know, charities that are serving underserved communities. So those are things that are going to take some time and things that they are certainly floating. But I do think that there is an approach that they could take with these jerseys that would sort of give us a little bit of the immediacy that we're looking for in terms of, like, what are you doing right now to take advantage of this moment? And this idea that they're going to have the jerseys with sort of social justice messages, they have ruled out the idea of having actual victims because they don't want to offend someone that might not have made a jersey. And they're doing this in conjunction with Nike, right? Because Nike had to sign off on this. I mean, they run this, right? Like, Nike had to say it's all good. But I think there's a way to sort of take these messages and potentially sell these jerseys, right? Like, online. Right. And then have proceeds from the sales of these jerseys benefit from some of these social justice causes. I also think that it's going to be interesting to see whether these teams tend to take an approach of sort of a unified front on what their messaging will be. Because what I'm hearing from all indications are the people in the NBA that are reporters and announcers are that the message they're getting is it's really up to you to sort of explain these messages, further the conversation, because the players are going to be playing. So if you see defund the police on the back of someone's jersey, it's going to be up to you to really make it make sense to the audience what that actually means, so that they're, you know, because there is more nuance than just this visceral reaction of, oh, bankrupt police officers? Like, what are you talking about? But I also think that that becomes very convoluted if everybody on the team has a different message, and it sort of rings a little bit hollow. So I'm interested to see if each team's going to sort of take an approach like, this is our messaging for the entire run, or this is our messaging for the entire week, and like, that's what we're going to do. I don't know. I'm really interested to see how it all plays out.
It is a challenge. We saw in the English Premier League that a lot of teams, went with it when Black Lives Matter on the back of all their jerseys. So it's not something we haven't seen before. You know, the group effort is something that has been employed in quite a few places, including across the globe. Let's hear what Nick Friedel, ESPN NBA reporter, had to say on Spain and Company about how players in the NBA are handling the movement.
Players seem pretty confident that the league is doing what they can in the moment, and that all the work that so many players put in, especially for the Black Lives Matter movement, is not going to be suddenly lost because the NBA is back. A lot of guys mentioned the league looking into put different names and causes on the back of their jerseys. A lot of guys have mentioned that the league intends to paint Black Lives Matter on the floors down in Orlando. But the interesting part of all of it to me is that one player after another has said the league is doing what it can in the moment, and there is a lot of momentum, but they can't lose that.
You're listening to The Intersection on ESPN Radio. Clinton Yates, L. Duncan. You want to tweet us, at Clinton Yates, at L. Duncan, ESPN. That's interesting to me because the notion that at some point the players could still potentially lose the support of the league is a fascinating one. And so I do think it is very important that the players feel that not only are they just getting their space to speak, but the league is actually backing them up, because those are not the same thing. It's one thing to avail somebody of a platform and say, all right, we're not going to bust you if you manage to do something that we can't, you know, control. It's a complete other thing to have a league say, this is what we need from you, this is what you are empowered to do, and this is what you probably should be doing. Not that it's necessarily going that far, but the idea being in terms of expressing yourself overall, that makes a world of difference. Because even if we look at the NFL right now, even if they say you can protest, I don't think any players are going to look at that the same way and say that they feel respected or somehow supported by the NFL. No. They're just backing off. The NBA, I think, is taking a little bit more hands-on approach to this, so that whatever comes out, I think that's a better result than the alternative, Al.
Yeah, and I think, too, just based on some of the players that I've talked to or done some of these sort of town hall meetings, these referendums, if you will, on race and whatnot, and they've said the same thing, that right now, you know, it's very nouveau riche and it's like of the moment for everyone to be all in and for companies to be supporting. But when eventually the fans start to push back, or when eventually the fans say, okay, enough, and I'm tired of hearing of it, is there going to be retribution should they continue to push these efforts? But I guess my question to you would be, like, at some point, you're going to get really used to seeing Black Lives Matter on the back of these jerseys and Black Lives Matter on the court. So what is the momentum, the sustained momentum, right, when we're in week 4, 5, and 6 of this, outside of, again, the symbolism of what they're trying to do? Like, how else do we continue to further that?
I don't know that we're necessarily going to be able to see that right now or even in our lifetimes, quite frankly, y'all. You know, and that's what the battle is about sometimes. You just got to do what you can do to make sure that people know what they're supposed to know. And if that's what it takes, that's what it takes. We not necessarily would have thought we'd have seen Confederate flags come down in NASCAR 30
Fair.
Years ago.
Yeah.
But it's happening.
Yeah.
You know? And that's something that we've got to be really serious about. Anyway, coming up, Del Matthews, MLB VP of Baseball Development. He's going to talk to us. He's my boy. He knows a thing or two about diversity in the game. It's the section on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM Channel 80. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests on the show appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. I'm Clinton Yates. She's L. Duncan, and joining us on said line right now is Del Matthews, MLB VP of Baseball Development. For those of you who don't know who Del is, basically he's from a baseball family. He's a brother I've known for a while. And ever since that Ian Desmond statement came out, you know, we wanted to talk about what that means just in terms of not basically everything around the game. But for those of you who don't know, MLB does do quite a few things at the youth level in terms of trying to grow the game, trying to develop, and trying to make sure that we all have opportunities. Dell, I want to thank you for joining the show. Just right now, though, tell us a little bit about what it is y'all do in regards to growing the game for black folks in America.
Yates, man, thanks for having me. L, appreciate you guys having me on. And you know what, we're doing a lot for African-American kids. As you mentioned, we've been in the trenches on this for the last, you know, 5-6 years or so, me specifically and other members of our team for a little bit longer. But, I mean, we've got everything from the grassroots programs of play ball and RBI all the way up to, development-type programs that we have with the Hank Aaron Invitational, named after Hank Aaron, which is a partnership with the Players Association. And we do that down at the Jackie Robinson Training Complex. Every summer with about 225 kids, majority African-American kids, and they're coming from all over the country, everywhere from California to Texas, Arkansas, New York, you know, Florida, Georgia, Carolinas. We get kids from all over. And they come in for about a week or so, and we take them through a spring training-type environment where we're going through the game with fundamentals and development programs. And then, you know, in the afternoon, we're playing games. And then in the evenings, it's chalk talk and talking how to better themselves and mentor them. And we do a smaller version of that with our breakthrough series in June. And that's for 3 days. And we do that at Vero Beach as well. And then we have our dream series, which is after Martin Luther King Jr., and we do that in Tempe, Arizona, and that's a pitchers and catchers and defenses focus camp. And these are opportunities for high school kids, African-American kids, to come in to learn from former major leaguers. They get very good instruction, and our partnership with USA Baseball allows us to underwrite the cost for the kids, and it's a great experience. And they come back, or they go back to their cities on fire for the game, motivated and, you know, wanting to take their game to the next level. Over 90% of the kids that have participated in the programs have gone on to college or professional baseball. And for us, we're extremely proud of that. All of them aren't necessarily playing college baseball, but the fact that they're going to college, that most are playing baseball and some have even gone pro, makes us extremely proud. And, we love where the program is going.
On the line with us, Dell Matthews, MLB VP of Baseball Development. He's joining us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Dell, we were talking earlier in the show. Clinton, as I'm sure you know, was in the RBI program and you know, participated in it. I am a lifelong softball player who also did some work with the RBI program in Atlanta in my old age. Do you feel like you're fighting a cultural perception amongst kids, inner city kids, black kids, who feel like, A, there's just not enough representation in baseball. Their heroes don't play baseball. Baseball's too slow. Baseball is becoming too much of a privileged sport. And the access outside of these RBI programs and some of the concerted efforts that you're doing, that it's just not winning the cultural war anymore about what's cool to play?
Yeah, I think definitely we've seen some of that. It's become expensive. It's become a little bit of a country club sport. And that's why we've, you know, initiated the programs that we have to address some of the costs. You know, you look at some of the players now, and you know, I love what Tim Anderson represent and what he's been able to do in terms of bringing some culture and passion and fire. Mookie Betts, some of the other players. But, you know, let's be honest, Michael Jordan came along and he swooped up and grabbed all of our hearts and basketball. Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, and you know, basketball has done a great job of marketing their players and making them front and center, and they're easy to identify with. The thing with those guys is most of them are 6'6", you know, or taller, and everybody
right.
Is not blessed with those, you know, natural, you know, physical, you know, traits. And so with baseball, you can be any size, any shape, you know, and you can play this game. You can, you know, you got Giancarlo Stanton, you got Jose Altuve, two of the best players in the game, and, you know, look completely different. And that's the greatest thing about baseball. I mean, if you fall in love with this game, it can take you a long way. And the chess piece, the cat and mouse, the back and forth, when you really understand the nuances of the game, make it a beautiful game. And, you know, that's why I love it. And when you have the opportunity to teach kids so that they're thinking two and three steps ahead, and then they start to get it, and you see that aha moment, that's when we really know that we're making an impact. And so from a cultural standpoint, sure, we want to do better. I think we're trying, and hopefully, you know, we're going to see progress with more players getting to the big leagues, guys like Joe Adell and Hunter Green hopefully coming along that we'll be seeing in a couple of years. And, you know, when those guys make it and you know, they're relatable, you know, more players will start wanting to be like those guys.
You're listening to The Intersection on ESPN Radio. Clinton Yates, L. Duncan. Dell Matthews, MLB VP of Baseball Development, joins us here on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. You mentioned Joe Adell, and he talked to The Undefeated a couple weeks ago, and he mentioned the concept of scouting. You yourself have obviously been a scout, for those of you who don't know, in Major League systems. And what he talked about was a very specific thing, Dell, the verbiage and the vocabulary were always looked at as raw, often looked at as speed guys. We end up getting scouted out of the infield because for whatever reason, everybody says, you know where you could help us? Use those legs out there in the grass and grab some balls. There's a lot of things around the game that you've seen firsthand that affect how black players are able to stay within the ranks of those that move up. Tell me a little bit about in terms of what you've learned and what you have sort of tried to work against when it comes to that kind of very specific thing from a language standpoint in terms of baseball.
Yeah, you know, Clinton, I appreciate you asking that. And obviously, you know, you being around the game and you've been privy to some of the verbiage and the language. And, you know, the raw tag, the green tag that you'll hear or that you read in scouting reports immediately when you're reading a scouting report and the scout has described the player as raw or green, you know that they're probably talking about an African-American player. And, you know, what we've really tried to do with our programs is remove that raw tag. Look, I worked in the minor league system with the White Sox for 8 years, and all of these kids are raw when they come in. I mean, they're not fine-tuned products, and that's why we have the minor league system. You know, we're honing in on the fundamentals and the development of the game. The speed of the game speeds up the higher up that you go. And so really what we've tried to do with our programs is prepare these young men so that whether they hit the campus or whether they hit pro ball, when they show up day one, they're confident, they feel good about their game and who they are, and more specifically, they know what to do. They know how to run the bases. They have great instincts. You know, before the ball is hit, they're thinking about plays that happen, plays that they're going to do before they even happen, right? These are the little things that make baseball players instinctive, and that's really what we're talking about at the end of the day. The guys like Alex Rodriguez or Mike Trout or Ken Griffey Jr. that, you know, are just naturals and get to the big leagues within a couple of years of out of being out of high school, you know, that's the exception to the rule. Everybody has a development arc. I think everybody is learning about the game. And with young African-American kids, a lot of times because of the cost of the game, they haven't gotten a chance to play a lot. They haven't gotten the coaching and the tutelage. And so that's why we've started the programs with Major League Baseball that we have, specifically the Dream Series, focusing on pitching and catching and defense. These are fundamentals of the game that we want players to be, you know, extremely comfortable in. We want them to be confident in their game. And ultimately, it's going to translate as we see them progress.
We're wrapping things up with Dell Matthews, MLB VP of Baseball Development. I want to ask you, we have about 60 seconds for you to answer this, which isn't a lot of time, but we're seeing the NFL and the NBA do a lot of introspecting right now because, as we all know, what's happening in the front offices and what's happening with the guys holding the clipboards is not representative of the numbers of black players, right? But baseball's in a unique position because, well, it's very representative of what's happening on the field. There are no black players. There are no black skippers. There are no black owners. There's very few GMs. And when I say none, I mean the numbers are relatively small. What do you think, Dell, is the first sort of domino that has to fall to change any one of those things?
Yeah, wow, 60 seconds. I don't know if that's quite enough time. I mean, we could start a number of places, but, you know, I was listening to you guys earlier, and really I think ownership, you know, at the end of the day, when there's an ownership opportunity, you know, let's get a seat at the table, right? You can't have a voice unless you have a seat at the table where you're one of those 30 owners voting. And if we have an African-American owner at that table, I think that's going to be a great start. Obviously, we want to see more people in the front offices. We have our fellowship program and our pipeline programs. We're trying to get more people on the field and in the front offices. And so, you know, MLB is working it from that angle. And, you know, as you mentioned before, this is a marathon. It's something, obviously, that we know about and that we're trying to address. And I know the commissioner is passionate about it. I've seen it, and we, you know, we had conversations with our teams and with our groups of how we can do better and what, you know, what more can we do. And there's a lot of people coming up with a lot of good ideas. And at the end of the day, you know, I think the discussions that are happening now are great. We want to see obviously some action items and some data points on the board. And I think we're going to get there. I think we're moving in the right direction, and we've got some help. We've got some allies, I think, which is most important. But I think if we can get a seat at the ownership table, you know, wow, that's going to be a game changer.
Mm-hmm. He's Del Matthews. He's the MLB VP of Baseball Development. Thank you, Del. Appreciate your time, brother.
Appreciate it, Yates. Look forward to seeing you soon, hopefully, man.
No doubt. Of course, he joins us. Pennzoil synthetic motor oils are made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil that's based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30. Love Dell. Like a mug.
Yeah.
Coming up, lift every voice. And the NFL's got to be playing Negro spirituals.
What is happening?
What's going on? It's the Intersection on ESPN Radio. Intersection on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80. Your boy Yeehaw, Clinton Yates, is in the building alongside L. Duncan. Our show is presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Let's go through the guests. Who do we have today? We had a lot of L's friends. L, who we have on the show today?
We had Renee Montgomery on of the Atlanta Dream. We had Hawks head coach Lloyd Pierce. There's two Atlantas. And another one, Rashad Milligan, who is a reporter in Mississippi and did a great job sort of kind of giving us, you know, the rundown of what's happening in the SIP since they got rid of that trash flag.
We also have my man Del Matthews, VP of MLB Development, who was on. So that was good. But I got to admit, man, the whole time the show's been going on, I've been seeing all these tweets about the football team from my hometown, and I'm a little shocked. First of all, FedEx said they wanted their name to change, as in the name of the franchise. If you don't know, the name of the stadium they play in is FedEx Field.
Correct.
So that's major. And then secondarily, it appears that Nike has taken down all merchandise from this team from their website to the point that even if you search the word, nothing comes up. That is amazing. I don't even really know what to say because all these things are happening at once, and I don't want to get emotional about all these progressive things. But anyway, Elle, what's your reaction to this?
My reaction is the same thing that my reaction was 2 weeks ago. Until your owner, Dan Snyder, decides that he's going to just stop trying to die on this hill, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter, Clinton. He's been unapologetically unwavering on this. And like, he still hasn't. What else has to happen, Clinton? You can take down as many statues as you want.
But I'm not here for him to have his mind changed. He just has to be convinced. There's a difference.
Well, the money talks, right? Money talks.
Right. Exactly.
FedEx
ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. So we're going to do a little thing here each week where y'all always say, oh, what can we do? What can our role be? How do we enjoy the beautiful black life that is of America without stepping on y'all's toes?
What?
We're going to show y'all, and we're going to tell y'all, and we're going to teach y'all with a little something we like to call the curriculum. Shannon hit it. That's the best bit of production on the network,
fantastic.
By the way.
Fantastic. I love it.
Just so we're clear on that. Different Worlds, offshoot of The Cosby Show, based at Hillman College, based on the Spelman and Morehouse Colleges in Atlanta, Georgia, where my sister is an alum of, and I know that Elle knows well, but we're going to teach y'all something this week. And here's the deal. The NFL, very weirdly, said that they're going to start playing what's known as the Negro National Anthem before games.
Yeah.
Lift every voice and sing. Mm-hmm. Old spiritual.
Yes.
I mean, but it's also the number one seed for if you could name a spiritual and you weren't black, it would be that. I'll give you Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. Some people probably know that.
Wade in the water.
I always thought that would have been a fun bit to do if, like, there was a guy on a baseball team named Wade and you had the whole dugout sing that song when he came up to the plate. Anyway,
Dwayne Wade. We could have done that with Miami.
Wade in the water.
Also, very quickly, sneaky. I don't think people realize a Negro spiritual is he's got the whole world in his hands. You sing that at church, like now, right?
That's true.
There's one.
Itty bitty babies. Anyway, so would you please talk to me about how you feel about these spirituals? Because I think people don't understand. Spirituals are actually important songs to us, but like, kind of not really sure that I need to hear Lift Every Voice and Sing before a football game.
Yeah, I will say Lift Every Voice and Sing is markedly more entertaining than the national anthem. Like, there's, you can at least have a little more soul with it, right? But yeah, Negro spirituals, for those that don't know, since we're teaching, like, were literally made, you know, or created back in the day from Africans, right? Because it was basically, you can take our freedom, but you can't take our music. And in particular, they would use it to communicate with each other behind the master's back. And they would use in many opportunities, like, a chance to sort of relay how they were planning on escaping. Like, the Underground Railroad would use Negro spirituals. So again, like, this was very significant at the time. And to your point, Clinton, they certainly mean a lot to my grandma, you know, rest in peace. We've all heard one time and time again, but like, I just feel like this is one of those memes where it's like, nobody asked for this. Like, we just want you to hire more black coaches. Like, we just want you to have more representation and ownership. We don't need you to just week one play Lift Every Voice and Sing. Like, what in the world of performative acts is this?
I'm not trying to laugh because I think it's ridiculous. I'm laughing because I can't stop picturing what happens when this actually goes down. My boy texted me. He said, what do you think Drew Brees does when Lift Every Voice and Sing drops?
Right. Do you put your hand over your heart?
Which go-to pose do you do? Is there a fist
Do you
in
kneel?
The air?
Yeah.
Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not exactly clear how this is going to go. And so there's a bit of a chaos element that I find kind of funny about this. But, L, this is what we talked about during the break. Who do you think should sing this? The first one, if it happens at an NFL game.
Oh, it's going to be Jennifer Hudson. Anytime there is anything low-key, anytime that something is somewhat spiritual sounding, it's always Jennifer Hudson that gets pulled into the fray. So I would say her. However, Clinton, you brought up a good point. Beyonce, because of her relationship with the NFL, right, and Roc Nation and Jay-Z, she could, and when you watched Homecoming for the 37th time the other day, you remembered astutely that she had done a version of Lift Every Voice and Sing. So maybe Beyonce does the opening game.
First of all, it was the 38th time. Thank you very much. And second of all, yes, Beyonce would be great. Shannon, though, I know that you sit around your kitchen table with your children and your family, and you go through your hymnals and sing, Lift Every Verse and Sing. Does your family know, Shannon, the second verse, though, after all that instruction in Sunday school?
Well, wait a minute. There's a second verse? Oh, nah. I got nothing for you, Clinton. Nope.
That's the verse. I mean, what? That's the thing. You know, people don't even know that. I mean, but look, overall, I get it. And if this is an opportunity for America to learn about why black folks were singing the way they were singing back in the day, more power to them. But I'll tell you this. I ain't checking for no daggone spirituals before no daggone NFL games that ain't by UGK, you know what I'm saying, or any of the other Negro national anthems that have subsequently been named, which ain't that. You know, I appreciate the effort.
Thank
but
you.
This
can we get Rose? Can we get Rosa Parks? Right, like
thank you.
The woman, like the song. Can we get right? Like I'm just laughing.
International
right now.
Players Anthem.
Hello?
Can we get that? There's a lot of things.
Thank you.
Here it is.
Thank you. Who wouldn't stand it? Like you could be like you could almost praise that. Like this is a worship song. You raise your hands. Yeah.
Exactly. But
I'm just laughing. I'm laughing at the names that Shannon put up on the screen. Fantasia.
John Legend. John Legend is a great name. I can see John Legend out here. With the piano at midfield.
Oh, Anthony Hamilton would kill it.
Anthony Hamilton would be fantastic. I just really hope that this becomes... Because, see, what the NFL did do for a while is they will always put a black service person in that position to sing the national anthem to give them cover. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, look, what you gonna say?
Right.
I said, more brothers have been singing the national anthem in the last year with uniforms on than they did in the previous 30 years. But that's a different discussion. But this is funny.
Mary J. Blige.
MJ would be good. MJB would be good. I would rock her.
She put a little bop to it, too. Lift every...
That would have Elle out there dancing on the screen.
Please. Okay,
you know?
No. Nope.
Anyway, I want to thank you all for tuning in very much.
Fantasia.
You know Elle from SportsCenter. You know her from Highly Questionable. You know her from Around the Horn. You know me from The Undefeated. And you know me from Around the Horn, too. It's The Intersection. Coming up, Freddie and Fitzsimmons, ESPN Radio. And apparently everything I say is hilarious because Elle can't stop laughing.
Oh, God.
Get some rest, kiddos. You've got a big weekend ahead of you.